Okay, if you can find your seats, that would be great. There's a few slides that you can watch as you're getting back to your seat. Service here this morning has been great, and God is here, and thank you for that. I get the unenviable task of not only following a great worship service and what has happened healing, but also having to talk about work. Our subject today is how we can take our faith to work and incorporate that in. There's a few humorous slides. A few are more thought-provoking. I'll let you pick out which ones are the humorous ones and which ones are the thought-provoking ones. That one's for you, Alan. That's good. That's actually our scripture there. So yes, we are going to talk about work. So my apologies for your last day before Monday morning, bringing Monday, having you have to think about Monday morning so soon. But looking at some things that that we can do to incorporate our faith into work, into work, and just so I'm equally sobering for everybody, for those of you I know have to start work tomorrow, also for those of you who are at school, that is part of, we're going to say that's your work. That's going to be coming up in less than a month probably for many of you. So enjoy the rest of your summer vacation. So now we're all equal. We have to. The adults can think about Monday morning and you can think about the end of your summer vacation. But on that note as well, when you're approaching school, I want you to think about it in some of these things that we're talking about, but also really grasping what is the benefit of school. And if I'd asked this question 100 years ago, the reason that younger ages would have been in school was not so much as education, that was secondary, but the Industrial Revolution was going on, and they didn't have child work laws and things of that sort. So really, one of the things was that they helped the work out was they said, hey, these kids we want to educate, so they weren't competing with jobs for actual families and wage earners. But the purpose of school now is not only education, and education, obviously, you take tests, they try to get for you or try to assess how much you retained and have learned. But really, when I think about it, when you're in school, college, whatever it may be, is the key thing is that you're learning how to learn. And if you learn how to learn and can continue having that attitude, that'll go well with you wherever you're working, and it certainly will go well in your spiritual life, because as you grow and travel on your journey, you realize that it seems that as soon as you think you have something figured out, there is something new to learn, both spiritually and also technically, or you're always in the process of changing. Give a short quiz here. Just this quiz, and I think many of you have heard this already, but this is to tell whether you are qualified to be a manager, and the questions aren't that difficult. First question is, how do you put a giraffe into a refrigerator? Carefully. What was that? Carefully. The correct answer is you open the refrigerator and put the giraffe in and close the door. Okay? This question tests whether you tend to do simple things in an overly complicated manner. Okay? Next question is, how do you put an elephant into a refrigerator? Okay, if you said open the door and put the elephant in and close the refrigerator door, that would be the wrong answer. Okay? You open the refrigerator, take out the giraffe, and put the elephant in and close the door. Okay? This tests our ability to think through the repercussions of our actions. Okay, third question. The Lion King is hosting an animal conference. All the animals attended except one. Which didn't even get the question out, and I have a correct answer. Which animal did not attend? The elephant. The elephant is in the refrigerator. This tests your memory. There's a river you must cross, but it is inhabited by crocodiles. How do you manage it? Correct. You want to give the correct answer, Madison? Right, you swim across. The crocodiles are at the Lion King's party, and they're not in there. So that tests whether you learn quickly from your mistakes. Okay, and the part here is it's a neat little test, but the part that really stood out to me was wherever I picked this up at. Actually, it was through a company called Anderson Consulting, and when they gave this to their managers and consultants, 90% of the professionals got all the questions wrong, okay? But then they gave the same test to preschoolers, age 4, and they got more right than these professionals did. So really what the thinking there is, let's take something very basic and not overcomplicated. So when we're looking at this, I'm going to try to streamline some things just to hit some of the topics that are the key points as we're going through. So I want to look at we're going to look at how we can take our faith to work, but first why we should take our faith to work. Madison, you want to come up here? Many of you have seen when Kendra pulls a string out, and she gives a whole week's time as to help us understand the short amount of time that we have on a Sunday morning when we're worshiping together and when we're teaching in Impact. So I want to use that same concept. I'm going to use a tape measure since we're talking about work. Let's see. I want to go down that way. Okay. That's far enough. Go to, you at 168? Good. Okay. So in our week, in any given week, there's 168 hours. Okay. If we're talking about a typical job, that would be, we're just going to use full time for our benefit. 40 is right here. I'll put a piece of tape there. Okay. Oops. So that's over 3 feet of the, what is the total, 13 and a half feet? Okay, so that's the total hours we have in a week. Now that doesn't look too bad, except for the fact is we have not eaten yet, we have not slept yet, we have not done many of the typical things that we typically do. But the part that we want to look at here is the significance of being able to take our faith into work is, this is a significant amount of time, okay? And you and I are called to take our faith with us wherever we go. We have learned and are encouraged that there is no difference between secular and spiritual. So it just is an encouraging spot where, you know, we see this 40 hours. Now, some may even get longer if you're working a longer week. So it provides with us, as we're going to look at, is opportunity to not only share our faith, but to grow in our faith as well. So you can roll that up, Madison. So just in perspective is, you know, our spiritual journey, our growth is not just about Sunday morning. That is a very significant part. We get unity, we worship, we come together, but going, our comings and goings are out in the workplace, out in school, and different places. So if you're just putting it into perspective, is if you take your hand like this and you take your middle knuckle, that's about an inch. Okay, so your church on any given Sunday is probably only two of those in a matter of 13 feet. So what the encouragement here is, we want to have our spiritual walk being not only in work, but the other spots in our life as well. The scripture that we can use to help us understand that is up here. It's Romans 12, 1:1. It's out of the Message. And it states, "So here is what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for Him." Our jobs are are part of our everyday life. And we do many different things when it comes to work, and most of them may or may not seem significant if somebody else is looking at them, but they are significant in the fact is that they're helping us along in our journey, and we are also have opportunity to impact other people. Work, like our family relationships, will give us that opportunity to grow. Mentioned already that before in speaking that family relationships are many times places where we get to work on some spiritual concepts. We find out who we are, who others are, and we're forced to work through challenges and difficulties. It's a spot where we have stress, and we're also very human with each other at home. There's a comfort level there. Work provides some of the same concept. I mean, it's not family members, but there are other variables that cause us to grow that are challenging and that we can't sidestep and we have to work through and deal with. So just to sum up, the reasons why to take your faith to work is we spend a lot of time at work, okay? It is an area where we can bring our faith to work. Our faith is a part of who we are, and work provides us an opportunity to grow. So we looked at the why. Let's look at what God has to say. If you show the slide of Genesis 1:28. It says, "God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds of the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground.'" Noel pointed out last Sunday that in this particular verse, Good Shepherd has been blessed and takes this seriously with all the children that we have. If we look at the second part of the verse, it says, "Subdue the earth," which means to overcome and bring to conquer and bring under control. Work was a gift from God from the beginning. Occasionally you'll hear people refer to work as a curse, something that came from the punishment or what was handed down at the fall when there was disobedience and when sin entered the world. Let's look at the placement of that command. Where do we find the placement and the blessing, or the blessing of the command in the creation sequence? The command was spoken by God before sin entered the world. That means authority and responsibility and work were created by God, and He called it good. Sin only entered the world in Genesis 3 as a result of Adam and Eve's disobedience. A punishment and curse was given as a result of the sin. Okay, there's some important things we'll look at real quickly here. Is the ground was cursed, not Adam. It says, cursed, in Genesis 3, it says, cursed the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat food from it all the days of your life. Also, the punishment did not revoke the blessing or the command that had been happened, that God had spoken earlier. It did not take away our responsibility or our authority. So today we're going to focus on the blessing and not the curse. So even though our work is not a curse, what are some of the weeds that come up? What makes, even though it is not a curse, our work can still be hard? What makes that hard? What are the things that come up that challenge us or challenges you? And you can feel free to volunteer an answer. Different work ethics, that's right. And that would be relating to other people, right? Some people view work differently, and we get to work with them, and that challenges us. Anything else?
Negativity.
Attitudes, yes. Another big one.
Tantrums.
Oh, that would be who you're working with, right? I can tell where you're working at. Okay. Yes, good.
Heat.
There's a good one. We actually had that, two weeks ago especially? For those that work outside, the elements are another thing. And not only is that something that we work with, but also those around you work with. And 90, 95 degrees outside on blacktop maybe over a period of time can tend to shorten people's fuses when it comes to dealing with things. And that's probably the most diplomatic way I can say it. So yes, that would be one. You can deal with the cold. Elements outside would be another one. For those that work in an industry where you're serving people, your retail, keeping customers happy is always something that's a big deal. It is. And, you know, especially if you're the person that has to bring customer expectations, employee expectations, other variables together, that creates some stress, okay? So our work can have some challenges. Those of you who are, you might say your job's boring. That could be a possibility. Deadlines create stress. Simple things that can really change our outlook. Let's see, is Grant here? Yeah, Grant. I had to think of one for driving. We got people that drive all the time. And I know this from when I tow some things. You're on the interstate, you'll be driving, and you get a comfortable following distance. And what happens when you get a comfortable following distance on some of these interstates, Grant? Well, somebody started saying, you probably got the right answer. As soon as you're, this is good. You got time. You're towing something. Grant drives a truck. As soon as you do that, somebody pulls in front of you. And what happens when you leave a little bit more room and you get it to comfortable again? Somebody does the same thing. And they just don't understand. But it is stuff in your daily job that will kind of push your buttons a little bit. And I'm sure a lot of jobs are that way, where you just have some of those things that are out of your control, but it challenges our response. And we want to look at our response real quickly. When we're looking at taking our faith to work, there was three words that I'll share with you so that we can hit those and you can kind of watch for them. One is choice, the other one is compassion, and the last one is creativity. So we're looking at choice. Our attitude is really important. So we want to put things into perspective. You can show the slide there, slides 3 and 4. This is a quote by Chuck Swindoll, and it starts out by saying, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It is more important than the past, the education, and the money, than circumstances, than failure, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance. giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, or a home. The remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I'm convinced that life is 10% of what happens to me and 90% of how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitudes. And that's from Chuck Swindoll. Okay. And this one here is a big challenge. We just looked at all the things, all the weeds that can provide or that can pose challenges for us. And for us to be choosing that right attitude can sometimes take some work, but it really is beneficial. And we'll look at our second concept that we're going to look at. We'll be blessed by that is, okay, work is not a place just filling your time. You saw the significance of how wide or how much of your week is spent at work. So it's not just a place to go between the weekends. It's not, you know, you're there for a reason. And if we choose to embrace that, we will see opportunities arise. It does not make it easy. It does not mean that things will go as planned. And many of us know that with the jobs we do, that to expect the unexpected is almost a very applicable saying in many jobs. So we can choose our attitude, okay? We can, and we can just knowing that to be appreciative of work, and that sounds kind of funny. Maybe you're thinking I spent too much time in the sun, but be appreciative of what it is, because a couple things make people appreciate things is one is when you don't have it, and also is that there are many things that we can gain from work. Part of our challenge and perspective is looking at that larger picture. Our primary purpose for working is, in our society, is mainly for a paycheck. To provide income for the things that you want to do or that are valuable to you. But if we solely focus on that income producing, we're probably missing some of the things that are also available in work. In your work, hopefully you can gain a satisfaction of something well done. And there is something very valuable to that. Whatever you may do, some jobs are easier to do than others, because sometimes we can see a result at the end of the day. Sometimes it takes days, weeks, months for people to see results in what they're doing. So we have to put those things into perspective. Also, we're challenged and we're learning. I mentioned that for the students, being willing to grow and learn is very, very helpful. And that is very evident in our jobs. Change is a part of life, and change is a part of work and business, and it happens pretty quickly in many cases. And the final thing, and this will help us transition to the second concept, is in our work, for many of us, we come in contact with other people, and we get the chance to be a part of their journey for maybe a little bit, for longer. We really don't know. And like for my work example, I have coworkers, I have customers, I have vendors, and with interacting with them, I also have the ability to share in some of their journey and also possibly do neat things like encourage or just even see them grow as well. So that would bring us to the next part is as far as when our goal in interacting with other people through work, should our goal be to convert them? And that goal I've heard teaching on. In fact, there's programs out there that will encourage us. They'll give us steps of the program, and they are good. The only problem is they're very That's a very fleeting and brief moment of interaction. Like one of the programs is, and it's a good one, is just to have somebody thinking about their eternal destiny. If you want them to be thinking, you ask them, well, what would you do tonight? Do if you died tonight, where would you be? Very thought-provoking question. But what I'd rather think of is, how can we impact them to get them to that, maybe get them to that spot, and maybe we won't even see them get to that spot. But if we only take that approach, it becomes very awkward and very brief, and we could really impact some of our future discussions with them. And for the most part, for most of us, God appeals to us on a heart level. He does. Nothing really happens in our lives without the Holy Spirit making our hearts sensitive to that, sensitive to Him and His work. And we're usually not going to appeal to people or rationalize them into salvation. Rather, I'd look to say our goal is to deliver hope. And that's where the compassion comes in. 1 Peter 3:15 says, "But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." What are some practical ways we can deliver hope? Alan had mentioned in communion of how we're not only, when we're dealing with sin, we're not only dealing with our sin, but also the sins others have maybe committed against us. And the realization is that when we're having part of a journey is that we're not perfect, and we're growing as well. And if we can have that realization, it helps out in our interactions with others. It allows us to give grace. There's a saying that says, we judge others by their actions and ourselves by our intentions. And when you think about that, that really can strike home in many cases. We don't intend to many times offend people. We don't intend to harm them. But like, as the saying is we many times will view other people and we're judging them by their actions. And we don't know what that person could be dealing with and what might be impacting that. Our responses in work will help us to impact people. Could be interacting with people, could be coworkers, and could be motivational, could be relational. People may or may not always be seeing eye to eye, so it really is, how can we respond in a way that would help them and encourage them? And really, it is beneficial. It's a challenge for us because we're not perfect. You know, especially when if you're stressed out or you're doing something, that may not be your first response. But people sense that, people realize that, and when you can minister in that way by responding in a way that would hopefully encourage them, that would listen to them. Today, in today's age, we have a lot of different ways of communicating. And there is a saying from quite a long time ago that says, the more high-tech we become, the more high-touch we will need. And it's amazing that with all the communication things we have today, if you asked, we probably have, as a society, have more people that are desiring somebody to listen to them, are desiring somebody with face-to-face contact. So that doesn't discount technology. All of the things that we would see are great, and they're there to supplement that. But when we're interacting with people, don't discount face-to-face interaction. Don't discount a handshake, a hug, a slap on the back, because people respond to that. We probably don't, as people, we don't realize it until it actually happens or you don't have it. And there are people that are not coming from the same environments that you do, okay? There are people that we get on some jobs that the way of doing business is, or I should say, occasionally you get a guy that his way of communicating is yelling at everybody, because that's how he's gotten his responses. And usually after showing him you're willing to work with them, that will slowly start to subside. Okay. Our responses are going to be tested out when things don't go right. People see how you respond. They'll see how you handle people, what you value, the integrity with which you respond. And those aren't easy, because really, when it comes to work, many times all the things that need to be done and responding in a way really puts us or somebody making the decision in a tough spot. So when we're saying that, we're not saying this is easy in many cases. But still, people will see yours and my response. And in those responses, over time, trust can be built. Okay? And we're not looking for perfection here. Many times when they see us as being human as well, that is encouraging. They'll see us growing as well. So it will create an authentic relationship. And a word that stood out to me is bonding. Okay, and anytime there's challenges somewhere and we have to work through as multiple people or as a group, bonding occurs. Bonding occurs on athletic teams. Bonding occurs in schools. Bonding occurs in churches. And bonding certainly occurs in workplaces. Now, you may not be best friends with the person, but it does create, when you work through something, when you work through a challenge, there is going to be a bond that is created there. And that will give you, or give anybody, a spot in which is it a relational spot. I see people I worked with years ago, and I can, you know, it creates a common ground to which we can talk. Even people I played ball with years ago, it creates a certain accomplishment that you can share, and will open the door for future opportunities to relate. The first two ones we looked at, choice and compassion, were dealing more with us and with the people we relate to. But the last one, creativity, is one that I wanted to look at, not only on a relational aspect, but also on a broader aspect for us and when we go to work. Work is full of challenges, and things are constantly changing. We've got to get used to the change. When we look at creativity, God, we many times look at it in the sense of artistic terms. But also in work and other fields is looking at what God has enabled us to do through the abilities and strengths that he has given us. If we can think of his creativity and the ability to solve problems, to minister and to interact with others, God created science. He created the arts. And he can provide answers to things that we don't even know yet. But with all the challenges, we have many challenges in our workplaces, in education, in our schools, in medicine, in government. And what, just the way of thinking is, what happens if through God's people he can provide creative answers? God created these things, and God can provide them. He did it for Israel. You know, they could find a well in the middle of the desert. Okay. That creativity, we want to be conscious of. We want to be open to how God is moving as we minister. We talked about ways of communicating. I do have a, since we're talking about business, I have an example that kind of gives you the other effect of not being open to new things. You can go to the picture. What I'm holding here is, anybody under 35 know what this is? Okay. You're not under 35. So, this is a picture of actual film. Okay? When I was a kid, the name Kodak was across, it was everywhere. They didn't make all the cameras, but they most likely made the film that went into cameras. Okay? This is pre-digital photography. Okay? And it was kids didn't take pictures because there was always a roll like this that you took of pictures. They were 12, 24, 36, and that's what you took them on. They had to go to a professional to get developed. Okay? Kodak was the name. They owned the market. Okay, and so we're talking about 70s into the 80s here. And they were the leader in digital photography. I can't specifically say if they discovered it, but they were aware of it and they knew what it was. They chose to keep their money in this type of photography. Okay? And we know now what digital photography has done. In the last 30 years, we can take better pictures on a phone than you could with a professional camera. Now, there are still professionals that use film camera, but they chose to stay with what worked for them. They chose, may have been a hard decision, but they chose what always worked. And it had a consequence. You don't hear the name Kodak anymore. Okay. In Rochester, there still is I think it's called Kodak Village, but it was where it was the headquarters of the whole business. Okay. It's only a shell of what it used to be. Okay. So they're a case study of business not embracing something, not being aware of what can happen if you're not aware of what is coming. The technology is out there. And we as Christians have a similar option as well. Okay, when we're ministering, we can say, well, this is what worked before, and we'll continue doing it. Okay, and there are things that are steadfastly unique to Christians that we will never give up. Obviously. Jesus is the only way to Christ, or Jesus is the only way to God. Okay? God cares about people. He does. That's why he has a salvation plan. Okay? After a couple of those core things, how you and I and churches minister to people is really up to us, or is up to his Spirit moving in us. So what worked 30 years ago may not be where his Spirit is moving now. So that's the part that, you know, the first two dealt with relationships, the choice and the compassion. The creativity is the part where, you know, be encouraged is, you know, we want to be open to where God's Spirit is and how he is ministering. And that's a good thing. It will allow us to be open to keeping that value of people and caring for people and trying to have them experience God. Okay. It also will help us in the workplace. Many challenges out there, some we know, some we don't. For those of you who are younger, you know, hopefully God will be working in your creativity that you provide answers. Society wants answers. God created science. God created the arts. He can bring all of that together. He can. So he can breathe life into challenges that we might appear hopeless. He can turn curses into to blessings. I'll show you the, you can show the last one, the picture. And I forget the lady's name. Priscilla. I'm sorry, I always forget that. This is a drawing, and this drawing or this painting stood out to me just with how in the center, with how the with Jesus Christ, with the blood of Jesus Christ, he can take something that is chaotic and bring peace. He can bring the lion and the lamb together. He can provide those breakthrough things for us and for his people. And we have that. We own that as Christians through his work in us, as far as, you know, whether it's answers, ideas, ways to impact the world. So just to wrap things up, to sum it up, it is our choice how we approach our jobs and our work, our choice how we respond, the attitude we bring to work. It is not easy and it may not come naturally, but it can be learned. And the more we're aware of it, the easier it will become to identify those opportunities. Oh, also, I invite the worship team and the prayer team to come up. Secondly, showing compassion. Jesus loved people, and so should we. We who have received grace also have the authority to deliver grace. It is not easy. It may come at a cost. And it may not be on our own terms. Creativity. We just finished on that one and how much the opportunity is there. We really don't know. I can't define to you what that is. But I have to think of in college, my roommate was into the singing group, The Doors. It's a rock group from back in the 60s and 70s. And Jim Morrison, who was their lead singer, was also a poet. And to say he was a strange bird probably is an understatement. I read some of his poetry because it was my roommate had it. But this is one of the statements I remember that he said. He said, there is the known and there's the unknown. And in between is the doors. Okay. So I'm not sure if that's where the name of the group came from. But realizing this is, you and I live in a society, in a group that people are seeking answers. Okay? And they're seeking answers to some very common problems to mankind. And I believe that God can provide those answers through his people. So invite you to come up and for prayer. If if there's an area of work that you're dealing with, a situation, a problem, if it's within school or even home. If you want to stand in the gap for somebody that you're working with, come forward. If you want help just being aware of what God is doing or God is doing through you, remember, he wants you to be at peace and you to be whole so that you can minister to others as well. Or if you just want a little insight into the creativity that God might have for you, welcome you to come up. So